Well, Marion Lavelle, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with us here at WPKN. I called you to find out what your take is on what happened today. There were two major things that occurred, events that occurred. First, there was the indication that we got breaking news that Trump is likely to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord, although I'm not so sure that was a big surprise. And then there was also the news that Exxon shareholders are demanding that the company be very clear about the impact of climate change on its reporting, on its bottom line. So let's take the first one first.
Right. It's very interesting, too, these two developments going in absolutely the opposite directions. And it really says something about where policy is headed compared to what general sentiment is, because that's what we're seeing in this shareholders vote. But let's, by all means, we'll start with President Trump. As you said, it's not a surprise because on the campaign trail, he said that he wanted to cancel the climate agreement. And of course, he famously tweeted that he felt climate change was a hoax invented by the Chinese to harm U.S. manufacturing. He was very heavily lobbied by many people within and outside the administration to keep with the Paris Climate Agreement, just even from a self-interested standpoint, that the U.S. would have more say, more leverage from staying within that agreement with 195 other countries. And yet, from the reports, it sounds like he is not going to take that advice and is going to go with his first impulse, which was to leave the pact altogether.
So, and tell us what some of the pressures that were brought to bear on him. I mean, it is interesting that Rex Tillerson, the current Secretary of State and ex-CEO of Exxon, wanted him to stay. So, who wanted him to leave?
The folks who inside the administration who seem to be leading the charge to leave Paris were the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt and also the White House counsel. Now, Scott Pruitt is very closely allied with some of the companies in the fossil fuel industry that are very, they have a very strong opinion on climate change. They do not see themselves operating in a way to really recognize that climate change is an actual issue. The interesting thing about Exxon is that for some time it has admitted that climate change is a real issue. They haven't done much to address it, but they admit that this is a reality. It seems that in the Trump administration, the folks who believe it is not a reality are holding sway at this point.
So tell us, what would this do if Trump does pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord? What would this do to the implementation of the agreement itself worldwide?
Right. And you hear almost from every country, and at the very beginning of this year, China said, absolutely, we are in the Paris Climate Agreement. We are going to keep in there and take leadership on this. The countries have been very firm about that this agreement is going to go on, but it greatly weakens the agreement as a practical matter when the country that is the second largest emitter of carbon emissions is not making any commitment at all to reduce those emissions and reduce production and use of fossil fuel. It weakens the effect of the Paris Agreement and it gives others an excuse to flee the agreement as well.
There have been some who say that the process of decarbonization has already started. It's inevitable that we will get there one way or another. Is the issue one of running out of time before we can protect the climate from reaching catastrophic stage?
Absolutely. It's about running out of time when you consider that we really have been hearing warnings publicly about this since the late 1980s. By some measures, we have only 5 years left to use up our carbon budget. Some say that it's a little bit longer than that, but really that is the problem. Now, under President Obama, we did reduce our greenhouse gases. We even got a third of the way to our commitment under the Paris Agreement. The problem was we needed more regulation. We needed greater ambition. We needed someone to follow the Obama administration to take us even further on renewable energy, further on cutting emissions from all different segments of the economy. And right now we're in a stage that really is at a critical time on climate change, where we're going to be standing in place and we're not going to be reducing our emissions. Probably they're not going to increase very rapidly, but they should be going down, and they should be going down deeply at this stage of the game.
Now, some people have said that the emphasis, the leadership in terms of the U.S. leadership, is going to now turn to the states. Can the states come in and fill the gap that is being created on the federal level to rein in our greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, I think some of them are trying and some are going to try. Absolutely, California has been a leader on this for years. The problem is you will still have states, you will have Wyoming and Kentucky still producing coal. You won't have everybody working together to really address this as a team working together, because we have to do more than reduce our use of coal. We have to replace it with renewable energy. That we have to do it in a way that brings jobs to those people who will be losing their jobs as the economy transitions. If you did this as an integrated economic policy, study after study has shown that you will do far less damage to your economy than you will just pretending that climate change is not an issue that you're going to have to deal with eventually.
So that will be the economic impact on the U.S., you say, is going to be negative. What about on our credibility as a nation?
The fact that if we leave a pact that nearly every other country in the world has joined, like this international agreement, like the Paris Agreement, I think only Nicaragua and Syria are the countries that will be joining outside of this agreement. It has got to affect our relationships with other countries on a whole variety of things. There are some analysts who predict that this will have trade consequences for us. If we aren't regulating fossil fuel emissions, isn't that an unfair trade advantage? Some countries may argue that. They'll try to challenge us on that in the venues that look at international trade disputes. And absolutely, it has big implications for us internationally. And I think that's why you saw Secretary of State Rex Tillerson on the side of, in his words, we should keep a seat at the table. Many people quibble that under his leadership, Exxon didn't do enough. I think that's certainly a fair argument can be made, but he, at least in the administration, was on the side of acknowledging that climate change was happening, and he was arguing for maintaining our role in this agreement that we really helped to shape.
So now this leads us to the second big news. Rex Tillerson was the CEO of ExxonMobil before he stepped down to take the position of Secretary of State. And today there was a rebellion at the 2017 Exxon shareholders meeting. Tell us what happened.
Yes, it really is a stunning development, especially if you've watched this over literally 28 years. It became kind of this annual ritual that there would be a shareholders resolution or more than one resolution on climate change. And when those resolutions first were brought up, around 1990 was the first one, they would get about 6% of the vote. And it was kind of like that for years. Well, today, the shareholders voted that they wanted Exxon to begin reporting annually on the impacts of climate change as a business issue. Integrate it into your financial reports, do an analysis on what impact is it going to have on the company if countries all over the world are making efforts to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by using less fossil fuel. What is that going to mean to Exxon as a business matter? And the folks who really led this were the institutional investors. They have responsibility for the investments of retirees in the New York Public Employees Retirement Fund and the pension fund there, the Church of England's endowment. Also, many public employees' pension funds, but also some of the biggest institutional investors in the world, BlackRock, State Street, Aviva. They all have been signaling that they want more transparency on the actual financial risk that climate change poses. And it seems that in a very deliberate and organized way, they voted against management on this issue because Exxon had argued, as they have argued for years, that they are making sufficient disclosures on this. If the countries are enacting climate change policy, well, we'll mention that in our annual report. Well, what the shareholders are asking for is something much more detailed. They want a real scenarios analysis. What does Exxon look like in a world where nations are really cutting their fossil fuel use to prevent worldwide temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius? So this was indeed a big rebellion, and it really, it's a milestone. What happens now, it depends on how Exxon really responds to this, but it is a big moment for shareholders and shareholder activists.
So explain to those of our listeners who, you know, may not understand the connection between reporting and real-world results. So explain what kind of impact this could actually have on the world's efforts to fight climate change. That's number one. And maybe along with that, explain what the whole concept of stranded assets is.
Okay. There actually is a lot to unpack here. One thing that we should say outright is that some climate advocacy groups argue that this reporting actually just isn't enough at this stage, that we're really beyond the point where more disclosure is what's needed. They say, we don't need Exxon to study how climate change is going to impact its profits. We just need them to stop producing fossil fuels. And they argue that institutional investors should just be divesting, just getting rid of their investments in these fossil fuel companies as quickly as possible. Then you have the shareholder activists on the other side of this argument say that, well, if we want to get a company like Exxon to change its ways, to invest in renewable energy, to really become an energy company instead of a fossil fuel company. We need to engage with them. We need to, again, to use Rex Tillerson's phrase, we need to keep a seat at the table. And they see this as a first step. The transparency is a first step to Exxon really having to reshape the way it does business. And again, it remains to be seen whether that reporting is really a first step. In the past, Exxon has made reports, and certainly not with the financial detail that was asked for in the past. But the way that they have analyzed this is they say, well, we believe that oil is going to be the world's primary fuel decades into the future. They don't see renewable energy reaching any more than 4% of world energy demand by 2040. And most scientists say that would be a catastrophe if we have that low uptake in renewable energy. Furthermore, they say that renewables have reached a point where they can be competitive with fossil fuels, certainly on and electricity, and perhaps with the electric car, with oil transportation. So, and that gets us to the issue of stranded assets. If we're all driving electric cars in the future, and Exxon is sitting on its assets, what it really owns is all of this oil that the company talked about, 1.5 billion barrels of oil off of the coast of Guyana and some of its offshore assets. Well, those assets, what good are they? What money is Exxon going to make selling those assets if everybody's driving electric cars? So those barrels, billions of barrels, would be stranded assets. And you can see why that is an important issue to institutional investors. I guess the question is, will they be stranded assets or not? Exxon has been arguing that it doesn't see that happening.
But isn't the issue also the issue of cost of extraction? I mean, I have seen estimations that we have reached or are close to reaching not peak oil so much, although we may very well have reached that, but more peak price of oil, because as the rest of the world does transition more to renewable energy, the price of oil is just likely to go down. You need to have at least, I mean, above, I think, $50 or $60 per barrel in order to produce these assets, these offshore oil, fossil fuels. So has this horse already left the stable?
Right. And you have to wonder, and some of the activists who were working on this project on pushing for greater disclosure at Exxon have argued that we are already seeing the impact of the world turning away from fossil fuels. We are already seeing that in the price. Last year, the price of oil was lower than it was in decades. Now, that is because there has been this shale fracking boom in the United States, but it also is happening at the same time that demand growth for oil is flat and young people aren't driving cars the way young people used to drive cars. And there is change going on in demand that I think that the oil industry absolutely realizes is happening. So that is one of the things that the shareholders are arguing. But I think that it has to be said that once again, we are running out of time. And even though you see some of these companies, they're walking away from the very expensive oil development in the oil sands in Canada, for instance. But there still are companies that are saying, hey, we will buy those assets and we think we can make money on them for a few more years. Well, we don't really have a whole lot more years to go. According to the science, we need to really work on deep decarbonization of the economy now.